The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
It's the Paul Feinbaum Show, featuring Jason Fitz. I'm sitting in for Paul, hanging out for the rest of the week in the seat, trying to do Paul justice and hang out with you guys, talking all things college football, 855-242-7285. I've asked you a great question, I think. What's your favorite and least favorite SEC traditions? The best and the worst, 855-242-7285. If you've missed any of the show, I want you to go back and check out the podcast, because I keep thinking about what David Hale just talked to us about a few minutes ago. And David Hale, one of the good, really great reporters that we have at ESPN that works on college football. And I keep thinking about Friday Night Lights. Now, maybe it's because, frankly, Friday Night Lights, the TV show, is the best TV show of all time. Don't at me. Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. Like, we all know this, right? But I keep thinking of Buddy Garrity sitting down with Coach Taylor, even giving Tammy sometimes, like just what was on his mind for who needed to play, when they needed to play, and how they wanted to play. And we think about that as being sort of art, but sometimes art imitates life. And then we think about it being college football. And sure, I'm not stupid, mostly. I'm sure that we all agree that boosters have had some level of, hey, really want to see this guy playing all along. But Lane Kiffin even pointed it out in his interview with Sports Illustrated that when he was the coach of my beloved Raiders, playing certain players wasn't up to him. The owner would call down and say, hey, you're playing that guy. What are we going to do when the person making those decisions is a booster who may not know anything about football? That's a crazy world to live in. And man, that's going to start to impact everything. Because now if we have boosters paying a ton of money that also have a ton of pull on treating teams like it's their fantasy football team, or they're the GM of a Madden franchise, all of a sudden are they going to coach and saying, hey, this guy needs to play. Coach has to play him because he wants to keep his job. And then all of a sudden, what do you end up with? Now the team isn't as good. Guys were played before they're ready. Whole coaching staffs are gone, and now we're replacing coaches constantly. Like, there's a new world to figure out. But figuring it out is the key part of what we're talking about. So you can't just look at it and say, oh, it's the new world. You got to look at it and say, it's the new world. How do we thrive in it? That's what I talked about yesterday. It's the new world. How do we nail it? How do we make sure that we are better than everybody else in the new world? Well, it sounds like, as much as we've talked about, what structure is there going to be? Think about some people yesterday. Somebody called yesterday with the idea of capping every kid at 200 grand and saying, hey, you know, kids don't know what to do with that money either at that point. We're sitting here worried about the kids when, again, we should be worried about the adults. It's the adults in the room that write huge checks that are going to say, wait, you know, Quinn Ewers being the great example of a quarterback that made a ton of money to go play at Ohio State. The problem is he never played. So what do you do when all of a sudden you've got a quarterback that's getting paid a ton of money? What if Arch Manning suddenly gets $10 million to come be the quarterback somewhere and doesn't win the job? Like, that is, we always talk about five stars like they're going to step in and everything's going to work out perfect and everybody's going to be really happy, but that doesn't always happen. So what do you do if you're a company or you're a collective, you're a group of people that have put all this money into getting Arch on the team, and Arch gets there and he just doesn't grasp things the way that you want him to? He just doesn't win the job. You want to tell me all the people that spent millions are going to sit back, hang back? And then just say, coach, we trust you completely. As long as he's playing in the next couple of weeks, we'll be just fine, coach, right? It's straight out of Friday Night Lights. And I can say that, and I can say I'm worried about it, and I can say that I'm worried about it for the kids. I'm worried about it for their development. I'm worried about it for the coaches. I'm worried about for their longevity. I'm worried about it for programs. I can say all of those things out of one side of my mouth and then confidently say out of the other, but this is what you got to get figured out. The answer isn't to go back to what it used to be. The answer is to figure out how to thrive in the new world. 855-242-7285 is how you get in on the conversation, taking your thoughts, all things SEC, and of course on your favorite and least favorite traditions across the SEC. Art in Birmingham. Art, thanks for hanging on. Thanks for calling into the show, man. Appreciate it. What you got? What's your favorite SEC tradition?
Well, you know, because a caller, I mean, You're really great, and I love to hear your musician stories. My favorite, no doubt, is the beautiful majorettes across the SEC. My especially favorite is when the Crimson Tide Million Dollar Band starts playing Rammer Jammer, and they flash the majorettes. You know, and my worst is, you know, there's that strapping male cheerleader, and he holds the female cheerleader up onto the palm of his hands, and he turns, and she faces the crowd. That's horrible. You know, and well, there are a couple other ones that happen in the SEC, especially is the number of people on the sidelines and how sometimes, you know, they'll get clocked. And they might even have, referees too. That's especially when it's really, really hot. So,
Art, I really appreciate it. I appreciate the call, man. And I'll say something about the marching bands in college football in general. We don't give them enough love. We don't give them enough respect. I hung out at Ohio State with the best damn band in all the land, and just watching them work and watching the work that goes into these routines, man. And look, I don't have the power to change the way people broadcast games. I genuinely wish that everything just stopped and we could do like picture in picture and we could let the marching bands get some love during halftime when they do these big performances, because they work their tails off on them and the whole world should get to see them. We should give more love to that portion of pageantry in college football. I realize I'm biased because of my music past. Not everybody agrees with that. But for me, I take it all day, every day. Let's go to Randy in Louisville. Randy, thanks for calling the show, man. What you got?
Hello, Jason, my friend. The best is it happens to be before you ever get to the stadium, and even during the week, if you're an Alabama fan, it's simply two words. It's just a nod of Roll Tide. The worst, by the way, is anything that Auburn does. I got to be an Alabama fan, brother.
I appreciate the fandom, yeah.
Look here. I would like to say this. Concerning Saban and Jumbo and all the controversy, I want to get in your wheelhouse for a moment. The greatest fiddle playing song ever, as we all know, is The Devil Went Down to Georgia. Well, when Jimbo goes down to Tuscaloosa, it'll all be settled on the field. The fiddle play will be done. And at the end of that, Jason, I can see it now. Saban will meet at the 50-yard line. There won't be a handshake. He'll just simply, he'll give a nod to Jimbo and say, I told you once, you son of a gun, I'm the best as ever been.
Oh, you know what, Randy? That is awesome, and that is a great call by you. I love every ounce of that. Thanks for the call, man. The handshake at the end of that game is going to be must-see TV, and you're right. Like that moment would be incredible, although I think we can all agree there's one fatal flaw to The Devil Went Down to Georgia. No disrespect to the great Charlie Daniels. God knows. No. One great flaw, though, The Devil Went Down to Georgia. And that's that the devil solo, I think, was actually better. I think if we go back and listen to it, the devil may have actually won that battle. That's all I'm saying. Randy, appreciate the call, my friend. Thanks for hanging out with me. I love taking y'all's calls. 855-242-7285. 855-242-7285. We'll get more of your thoughts on the best and worst traditions in the SEC. Plus, there's a disagreement on what the NIL conversation is all about. One of you guys wants to chime in. We'll do all of that coming up on the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz, filling in for Paul.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Paul Feinbaum Show. Jason Fitz sitting in for Paul today. 855-242-7285 is how you get in on the conversation. 855-242-7285. As you guys want to chime in, I'm asking you for your best and worst traditions in the SEC, all in honor, frankly, of the Vandy Whistler. It looks like the Vandy baseball game today has been rained out, which means we won't have to listen to any of the whistling. I still support y'all. If you don't like the whistle, just take a bunch of air horns in. I don't know if that's allowed. I'm really just throwing this at a wall to see what sticks. I just think if he's whistling and 10 people sitting around him just pulled out air horns and went straight at him, like, I would think it would stop the whistle. The whistle might be kind of cool if you're into it, but it also disrupts everybody else's viewing. I'm just saying, that's my thought, but it had me thinking about the best and the worst of the SEC, which you guys want to chime in on. Mark in Gainesville. Mark, thanks for calling the show, man. I appreciate it. What's on your mind?
Well, let's start with the best. I'm going to side with you, the Gator Band, before kickoff, you know, when they come out with the and double step, hot step it right out onto the field after they chime, I would put it as the best. And about anything Gators, the Gator greeting, you know, go Gators. You always get a response. It's great to be, or you get a go Gators back. But there's another side to this that has to do with that NIL I want to just throw in there. I'm a 60-season ticket holder supporter and ticket holder. Third generation. Every year we had to put up X number of dollars, currently around $5,000, I think, as a donation for a better choice of seats. Okay, I get that. Then all of a sudden last week, I get just hammered by emails about joining this collective. And in no time flat, they've raised millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands, now millions of dollars. I don't see how this is amateur sports anymore. I don't understand it. I thought a sports person got a scholarship and a free education. And while I was going to school at Gainesville, they ate the best. They lived in the best dorm. They were treated like kings by the students and a lot of the fans alike. Now you're telling them, any athlete, you need to go get an agent. You need to start, you know, doing this NIL, build a brand, and be good at social media. How is this amateur sports anymore?
Well, I mean, and I appreciate the call, Mark. The thing that I would say about this, and forgive me, anybody that's listening to the show that's ever heard me say this before, I will make this as quick as I possibly can. But whenever there's an argument about not paying or not allowing these kids to profit off their name, image, likeness, I always use one primary example, and it's from my life. I was a violinist growing up. Y'all know that. Fiddle player is how I made the majority of my living. But I was a classical music kid growing up. And when I was growing up, Indiana University of Bloomington had one of the best classical music departments, violinist teachers in the country. And so when they offered me a full scholarship, it would have given me the opportunity to study with the best of the best, to use the best practice rooms in the world, to get the best coaching, the best teaching. It puts me in a situation to get better auditions when I get out of school. All of those same things with a free education and a meal plan. All of those same things that you afford an athlete. The difference is I, as a violinist, would have also been allowed to participate in orchestras that I wanted to participate in, take all the paid gigs that I would want to take. I was able to, if I would have wanted to, I could have gone in and taught kids with a higher dollar per hour teaching rate because I went to Indiana. All of those same sort of things that are afforded to every athlete, music kids, are allowed to do. And on top of that, they're allowed to earn an income. Why do we not afford that, frankly, when it comes across the board, all the way across the board, to every single person that's going to a school? Why are we treating a football player any different than we treat a violinist at the same school? And the other portion of it you have to remember is that any conversation about amateur sports isn't just about football. I mean, if you look at the metrics last year of the 10 athletes that had the most monetizable social media, 7 of those 10 were female athletes, gymnasts, basketball players, soccer players across the board. 7 of the 10 were women athletes that won't have the opportunity as professionals necessarily to make that same money that football players make or that NBA players make. But because of name, image, likeness, somebody like Paige Beckers can go in right now as an incredible basketball player at University of Connecticut. She can go in today and she can give herself the opportunity to start making money. Somebody that is an incredible gymnast at Florida can go in and today start making money that they wouldn't be able to make otherwise. So when you ask for football players to be treated with some sort of different status, ask yourself, why are football players being treated differently, not only than musicians, but other athletes? And why would you deny the opportunities for every other athlete at that school just because it helps football? I've worked a lot to help save swimming and diving for several Big Ten schools that are working on ways to try and keep programs there that allow for at least partial scholarships. And one conversation I always have when it comes to name, image, likeness is this. Remember, there are a bunch of swimmers that aren't going to go out and make millions of dollars. But if they had the opportunity to be a judge at a swimming competition or a swimming coach while they're going to school on whatever level of scholarship they get as swimmers, man, that's a huge, huge opportunity that can change somebody's life. Now, I understand which sports make money for schools. I understand that through and through. But opportunity is opportunity. And at some point, why are we going to deny opportunity for everybody else on that campus simply because it makes us more comfortable with how our football programs are handled? 855-242-7285 is how you get in on the fun. It's Paul Feinbaum. I'm Jason Fitz sitting in for Paul. Richard, thanks from Alabama. Thanks for calling the show. What you got for me, Richard?
Hey, thank you. So listen, I'd like you to hear this as if you're Mark Emmert or on the executive council of NCAA, because I would suggest that they would fall right in the middle of all of this. Okay, so the NCAA, you know, obviously they've gotten beaten like a drum in all these cases, right? So in anywhere, but they still have, and I think a lot of people misunderstand the Austin case, the O'Bannon case. It was even one of the opinions. The Lamborghini rule still applies. You can't offer a Lamborghini to go to a school, when the justice wrote that. So NCAA sets up a clearinghouse, and every detail of an NIL deal has to be approved by the NCAA first. You had, like, for instance, the Arkansas offensive lineman wants to represent, you know, a barbecue place. Every detail has to be submitted to the NCAA first before any money changes hands or benefits to make sure we don't have pay-for-play, pay-for-performance, or recruiting enticement, okay? And then that way, they at least – That would be some transparency, and like I said, everybody then would know what the deals are, and it would seem to be legitimate. Does that make sense?
That makes a ton of sense. Let me ask you a follow-up question. So what do you do in a situation, because one of the things, I believe it was David Hale was tweeting about the other day, was that most places, when you're doing a little radio hit, you know, if you ask me to go on a radio station, I do that for free, right? But for some people, they charge a little bit of money, maybe a couple $100 here and there. So one collective had gotten athletes as many as, I think, $500 a week for a podcast appearance, was the example they gave for Bo Nix. But some of the Texas A&M players were asking for $5,000 an appearance. So how does the NBA, or the NBA, how does the NCAA turn in and legislate the amount of money? Like, is it, are we now allowing the NCAA to decide what fair market value is for the appearances that everybody makes?
No, that's a great question. That's it. No, they would stay out of that completely. They don't value the deals or put a worth on it. If someone wants to appear for 2 minutes and get paid $20,000 for 2 minutes, fine. That's what the market bears. They simply are making sure that this is not, also doesn't violate, like, gambling, alcoholic, or some of the prohibitions that are set up as well, because there's not a single state NIL law, California, Texas, South Florida, and none, and the Austin case didn't do it. O'Bannon case did not restrict NCAA's ability to regulate pay for play. Okay. Remember, the Austin case is strictly about academic benefits, you know, which if you get a laptop, you know, for one of your classes. So they still have that power, and they could use that power to say, look, you guys do what you want to, and the marketplace be wide open. But we get the first shot at this to make sure you're following all the rules and everything has to be transparent so that everybody knows what everybody's getting, and we have to prove it first. And there would be very little, if any, lawsuits over that. So that way they're not regulating who gets what and putting a value on that. They're simply saying everyone's going to know about it because we have to approve it first. And I don't see how you can challenge that in court.
Yeah, Richard, thanks for the call. I have no problem with any of that. I think that's a great idea by you. I have absolutely no problem with any of that. And realistically, the other thing I'd say is that schools right now are missing a huge opportunity to educate kids that are on campus that want to be agents. I mean, that's the other part of this. Like, if you want to be in sports marketing, you want to be an agent, you want to work with athletes, there should be right now, they should be building entire departments of schools that teach you sports business that will let people learn how to become the athlete, the agents and managers to these stars as they go through their college process. It's a great way to teach the other kids that are on campus that want to learn more about the business side of the process. We'll keep taking your calls, 855-242-7285 on your favorite Traditions Plus. One of my one of the smartest guys we have that just knows more about NCAA football than 90% of the people that work at ESPN is going to join us next. I'm going to pick his brain about all of your theories and mine. We'll do that next on the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz, filling in for Paul.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Paul Feinbaum Show on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz, sitting in for Paul, hanging out with you guys, asking you your favorite and least favorite SEC traditions. 855-242-7285. Plus, everybody's fired up about NIL. And it's really, I don't blame anybody. This is a new world. And the faster we accept that whatever we used to know isn't real anymore, the easier it becomes for all of us to try and figure out how to navigate the new world that we're in. Now, I never bring you guys experts that I don't think add a tremendous amount of value, and you know Cole Kubelik well. I will just say, I will never forget in my life. I had the opportunity years ago, and I was such a new person to ESPN college football coverage at the time, and I got to do the mock playoff committee. And when you sit in the mock playoff committee, you sit with 12 other people, so there's 13 of you, and you go through the entire process just the way the committee does. And it's there to help all of us learn how that process works so we better understand it when we analyze it. I will never forget sitting in the room with Cole and just walking out of the room saying, that guy knows more than I do about everything, and it charges you to want to be better at your job. That's why I think it's important to talk to somebody like Cole in a situation like this. So, Cole, I appreciate you hanging out with me. I appreciate you bringing your expertise to this, because this is a new world we're all living in for any of us that cover it or love it or watch it. So as we look at name, image, likeness, I guess the first thing that I continue to try and wrap my head around is, what next? Since the NCAA didn't get a system in place before it started, can a system ever be put in place in your mind?
I don't believe so. Not under the current setup, Jason. I think if you're talking about going backwards or adding guardrails or putting the car back in the garage or putting the pieces of the puzzle back together, I just don't see it. I don't think it happens. You're going to get sued. And there have been articles that have been written with attorneys that have already said, we're just waiting for somebody to try to put something in place that's going to limit the potential earning power of my client, and I'm going antitrust suit on the NCAA. Get ready. And the NCAA is going to sprint from that. They want no part of it. Whatever they spent, $58, $78 million in legal fees last year, taking a bunch of L's, by the way. So I don't see any way that you can put any of this toothpaste back in the tube. It's out. It's done. This is what it is. You know, I guess from a booster relations standpoint, you could try to put something together that would try to keep things from being, I guess, as much of a pay for play situation that we're starting to sort of see. But again, every time somebody comes up with a solution or a fix or a way to sort of negate some of the things that are happening that don't seem to be what's best for college football, the first thing that comes to my mind is lawsuit. That's what you're going to get. And the NCAA just cannot handle any more litigation right now. So I think they'll talk a big talk. I think they'll suggest things that they want to put in place. I think they'll try to make it sound like they're going to enforce certain rules. But I really don't think they can do it, because at the end of the day, they can't afford to get sued anymore. Now, down the road, when I think what we all believe to be inevitable, and that is this giant breakaway split, like this tectonic shift where the continent split again and 45 or 55 or 70 teams pull away and form their own new division. Could there be a way, once you go do that, that you could pull that off?
still might take the government to get involved to be able to do it from an antitrust perspective. But I just don't see it, Jason. And I don't see any way that this thing's going backwards.
So then if you're a school and you're trying to navigate these waters, now you have a bunch of boosters that are just outwardly paying a ton of money to pay players at some point for whatever the services they're getting back. How do you keep those boosters at bay when they demand playing time?
I think you just have to have an understanding that our coaches, you boost. And we're gonna choose who gives us the best opportunity to win football games. That's why he makes $5.5 to $10 million a year. Because this is still his football team. We're very appreciative of what you've done, which if we're being very technical here, Jason, that part shouldn't really matter because the coach shouldn't have to go back to the collective because he's not really allowed to have a lot to do with it. As we've heard Jimbo say recently, like he doesn't really know about it. He doesn't deal with it. He doesn't talk to him, apparently. So, which legally in a lot of states, that's the way that it's supposed to be managed. It's supposed to work. I think that's one of the issues that we'll find down the road is, not just that, as far as the people who are putting big money into a collective wanting a say. And, I mean, listen, I graduated from Auburn. I played at Auburn. I lettered at Auburn. I know what it's like to have people behind the scenes, you know, wanting to get their way and wanting to have a certain amount of pull. I know it maybe as well as anybody in the country. But I also think that once we get down this path a little bit further, you know, you're going to see when you get these small businesses in a certain town that throw in 10 grand, but Mega Booster comes in and throws in 3 million. Well, then you and I as fans throw in 150 each. What's the divide? What's the split? Where does it even out? And I think you'll find some people probably get frustrated with that, too. I've already heard from multiple people on staffs around the SEC and outside the SEC that current players are frustrated. And the current players and the parents are calling the coaches saying, hey, we're here. This recruit got this. We've been starting for 2 years. We've been here for 3.5 years. We're on every special team, and our kid, you know, is a reserve player that gets legitimate snaps. We got nothing in NIL. So that's becoming a bit of a problem. All of these headaches are not going to go away. New ones are going to present themselves. And the one thing that I question maybe more than anything with this are the coaches that continue to bring up sustainability. You know, this can't sustain itself. This is not sustainable. Why are we worried about that? If that's the case, then you know what? It'll just go away and it'll be done and it'll stop. So, the concern with sustainability to me is a weird one because I think that's where it levels itself and it'll even itself out and it'll just sort of figure out the market will basically even itself. So I don't know why that's a big problem, but that is something that these coaches are going to probably have to juggle a little bit more of because now, you know, those boosters are directly involved with a certain guy deciding to go to a certain school. You heard Lane, or you saw Lane's comments and Sports Illustrated today about how recruiting is going, how guys are making decisions. He doesn't really blame them, but that's where we are.
Do you agree, speaking of Lane, he said in that interview that he doesn't believe that coaches or facilities or any of that makes a difference. The kids are going to take wherever they can get the most money in NIL. You know kids playing the game all over the country. Do you agree with that?
I've asked coaches that recruit at probably 10 of the top 25 schools in the country on a regular basis, if not a few more. And the question that I've been very interested in, Jason, is how far do you get in these conversations before NIL comes up? And the majority of them say second question or right past the introduction. So, yeah, Lane's spot on based on the people that I'm talking to, and Lane's not somebody that I've asked that question to. And I think that is very real. I think that's one thing that Coach Saban addressed at about 2 weeks ago now at the World Games sit-down fireside chat that he had here in Birmingham, Alabama. You know, you heard him kind of mention that you know, that's an early portion of the conversation now. And it's the only part of the conversation that a lot of kids are interested in. I've asked some other guys, where do facilities, where does – you know, the curriculum that the school offers, the geography of the school, the student body, everything else that's happening, you know, the living situation, the stadium, where you play, the tradition, the uniforms, where does all that come into play now? All of them, secondary, tertiary, not a big concern, don't really care. And I think the other part of that too, Jason, with that attitude going in, is a lot of guys look at it now and say, well, if I screw up, I can just transfer somewhere else. So who cares? If I go somewhere for 1 year and I didn't pay enough attention to what the student body was like or where it is, or if I was going to like people, or if I was going to like the staff, or if the fit from an X's and O's perspective, the scheme fit was good for me or not, who cares? I'll just leave the next year. And a lot of these NIL deals are not written to the school. They're written to, are you performing in college football? Well, that could be Maryland. That could be UMass. That could be Texas. That could be Auburn. That could be Tennessee, Chattanooga. It doesn't matter, because these collectives are smart enough to understand, I'm not just going to write it to school X. I'm not going to write it to, you know, whatever it is state and say, you have to be playing there to get this money, because obviously based on a lot of state laws, that's not going to be kosher. So I think a lot of them look at it too and just say, I'll go. I mean, we're seeing guys transfer their fourth and fifth schools. So they're probably looking at it like, well, if I hate it there, I'll keep my NIL money. I'll find somewhere else to go.
But is that portion, like the transfer portal of it, Cole, I think is particularly interesting because, you know, if a collective at Miami gives somebody a bunch of money to play there and then all of a sudden he decides he's going to transfer to Florida State or decides he's going to transfer to Clemson, like a rival, how does that end up going over for the collective?
It depends on how your contract's written, which is why the players need agents and good agents and not agents that are just going out trying to get the most money or the fastest money. And it's why the collectives or the individuals that are putting the deals together better lock in some CYA when they're putting these deals together. I mean, that's tough is what I would say. I mean, that's what are you going to do? You better have an exit clause in the contract that says if you leave, I'm thinking of how you could write it, because if you can't have the school written in, Jason, maybe it's the state of Florida. Maybe it is a certain conference, or maybe it's Power 5 level, something like that. You could still get got if somebody went from Miami to Texas A&M or Miami to Oklahoma or Oklahoma to USC. So that's where a lot of the clarity is just not there yet. We don't know. And I think that's one of the areas where I think Coach Saban went wrong in his address on that same evening that I referenced. You know, talking about, you know, Travis Hunter didn't say him by name, but getting $1 million. We don't know that. It actually hasn't been reported. Nothing's been reported with the A&M class. We don't know exactly what happened with those guys. Now, we all hear things. There's a lot of chatter, a lot of discussion, but there's no way to just go click something or call somebody. You know, you can tell me to do my research, but if I call your compliance office, are you going to tell me what all the NIL deals are? Well, hell no, you're not. So how do I do my research on it? How do I go find out what all of the NIL deals at Auburn look like right now? Because compliance isn't going to hand me that information. So they don't know. They have no idea. Now, the portal that you bring up is a totally different discussion, and that's where I do think college football could potentially repair itself. The recruiting calendar has to be adjusted. The portal has to open and close, in my opinion. If it were me, I'd get rid of the early signing period, because a lot of what we're seeing are guys sprinting to their new location to assure themselves a spot. So we saw a couple guys last year with 1, 2, even 3 regular season games left said, look, portal, I'm in. And the only reason they did that, even though they quit on their teams, and you're never going to convince me otherwise, you had games left to play, you quit on your team. I don't care if your ACL is hanging outside of your kneecap. You quit on your team when you walk away with 2 or 3 games left. Doesn't matter what your status is. But those guys are – there is a panic. There is a paranoia of assuring yourself you get a spot at your next school. So when they become that paranoid, they will leave early. They will get out of town before the season's over. They don't care about their situation or what's going on. So I think you could eliminate that by moving the early signing period back and then say once the regular season begins, on week 0 when we kick it off, portal's closed, man. Open it up midnight after Army-Navy. You're done. You're not going in the portal during the season while you're playing football. It's ridiculous to even think about that should happen, in my opinion. And then maybe you open it up after the regular season, you give guys a chance to go. If they want to move before a bowl game, so what? And then you close it again, go through spring practice. You give them a 2-3 week period after spring practice where we know all these guys are going to get their feelings hurt because they're not the starter and being told that they're the best player in the history of that program. And they're going to want to go somewhere else. So give them 2-3 weeks after spring ball. You can portal out again, find a new place to go. If you want to give like an emergency week before fall practice begins and say, you better know where you want to go. You better figure it out because it's going to have to happen quick. And then, boom, you get out of Dodge and go play somewhere else right before fall practice begins. But there's got to be a way to help coaches manage the rosters. There's got to be a way to slow down a little bit of the movement. And I think when you slow down some of the movement, it would also slow down some of the enticement. Because then at least you're going to have to sit there and wait. If somebody offers you X amount of money to go to somewhere else through the portal, then, you know, then that's if that's going to be 5 months, 6 months from now, you know, at least you're going to have to sit there and wait on that deal to still be present by the time you actually get to that moment. And that's the thing that kind of irks me, is there are a lot of people that say, well, this has been going on forever. This has always been going on in college football. Garbage. It's never been to this extent. And the main reason is what you just brought up, Jason, the NCAA transfer portal. Because have there been guys that are getting paid for a long period of time to go to certain schools? Yes. But we've never been finding money to entice players to go into the portal and then go find somewhere else to play. That's why this has doubled, tripled, quadrupled what it's ever been in college football before. And the way that this is working, a lot of the agents are talking to certain kids and they're saying, if you might be interested in X amount of dollars at one of these three schools, you need to go into the portal and I think I can work that out for you. So you got kids putting their names in and they don't even know if they have a deal or not, but they're thinking that they're going to have a deal at one or two or three spots. Some of them don't get it. Some of them do. And then they go on and make that decision.
It's a great breakdown by you, and why, if there was a czar of college football, you'd get my vote. Cole, always appreciate your insights, my friend. Thanks for hanging out with me.
Hey, Fitz, I appreciate you catching up. I really wish that I could remember what the, I think, 7 and 8 ranked teams that we were debating about that time when we went back and did the college football playoff mock committee, and everybody was just wondering why I was arguing about it so much. I just figured we need to argue about something. It was too easy, the top 2 and 3, so. We need to argue you, somewhere.
It stuck in my mind, though, brother. You taught me something there. Do your homework on all of them to the deepest and darkest and best level, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for hanging out with me.
Yeah, man. Good catching up.
Follow him on Twitter, at Cole Kubelik. Always doing great work. You guys want to chime in? I'm going to let you chime in. We're going to take more of your thoughts on the best and worst traditions in the SEC coming up next. The Paul Feinbaum Show. Jason Fitz sitting in for Paul.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Sometimes you have a guest on and it just makes you think. That's what Cole Kubelik just did. Great thoughts on the transfer portal and how it's impacting NIL and all of college football right now. It's the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz sitting in for Paul. You guys hanging out with us, 855-242-7285. I want to get right to you. Ed in New York. Ed, thanks for hanging on so long, man. What do you got? Thanks for calling the show.
Hey, a lot of guys, I don't know if it's been said, but, you know, you give these kids the money, there's got to be some accountability of how it's spent. What I'm saying is you get a young kid with a lot of money, you know, he may have friends trying to steal it off him. You don't know what his parents are going to do. So, you know, there's problems there, too, and they got to, you know, definitely make sure what they do within the laws of taxation for the state that they live in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, I mean, Ed, my counter to that, though, is that's – A, when you start making money, you know, you figure out taxes. Like, if you're making money, you can pay somebody if you need to. But the other side of it is,
yeah, well,
we don't worry about that with. We don't worry about that with Justin Timberlake, did we?
Look at the NFL and the NBA and see what happens to those guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but look at Macaulay Culkin too. But we don't turn. I mean, he made all that money as a child actor and then was broke and now made money again.
Yeah.
But we're not sitting there saying, oh, man, child actors can't make as much money because Macaulay Culkin lost.
No. I'm just saying that I'm concerned. Yeah, I'm just saying I'm concerned. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, a good family and a smart father will make sure everything is invested or whatever they're going to do. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying we may see some headaches with that. I didn't say not to go to it. But the other thing is when a kid goes from – when he goes from one school to the other, right, he's going because he's got a problem at that school, right? So if he's going from Alabama to, say, Oklahoma – he's got a problem on the roster that he's in. And the other thing is I can't see – I don't know where it's going to go because we don't know where the agents are going to go. You know what I mean? That's a lot of it too because there's no restrictions on them. But I will say that where was I going? I'm 74. But, you know, no guy's going to put – a lot of these guys that have been given money, they haven't produced on the college field yet. I mean, a lot of these young kids. So after a while, you're going to get tired of putting $1 million in it. You know, if you're supporting it to the school. I don't know where that's going to go either. I'm just bringing up points. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think you're right, man. And thanks for the call.
I don't know where it's going to go.
I think you're right about that. Like, there is, for me, in my mind, that, and I've asked some experts about this. They say, hey, don't worry about it. Most guys have so much money, they don't mind losing it constantly. But I think there is something real to, okay, we gave this quarterback $10 million, but what did we get out of it? And by the way, they didn't turn out to be any good. Like, I wonder why, if in 5 years, this will all sort of take care of itself. But in the next 5 years, we'll all be yelling and screaming about it. 855-242-7285. You can keep hanging out, giving me all your thoughts on the best and worst traditions in the SEC. And also on all your thoughts, SEC and NIL. It's the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz, filling in for Paul.